It's 1 o'clock, and here is Mary Margaret McBride.
I must tell you, this is one of our nerve-wracking days. We are to have a distinguished guest from Washington, or perhaps I should say we were to have had a distinguished guest from Washington who was flying to LaGuardia Field. He was being met there and driven out here to Larchmont, where we're broadcasting from the terrace of Marjorie Evans' home. He hasn't turned up. I'm not even going to say his name. Unless he comes. Probably they're wandering around somewhere.
That's what I'm afraid of, yes.
Well, anyhow, I think we'll get right to the products and do as many as we can before the distinguished guest gets here. And all of you say a little prayer, because honestly, I don't know what we'd do with a whole hour, do you?
I don't know. It's a long time.
He's the only guest. My goodness, I'm certainly glad to see you. You're the only guest today. I haven't even told him who you are. I said you're a crusader from Washington, and so you are. We're talking right now.
Who are you?
I'm doing products.
Good.
So you just sit quiet.
All right.
If you can, if you're ever quiet. We've got a nice long time to do this broadcast, so you don't have to bother.
You're shaken.
I am shaken.
Well, I'm the one ought to be shaken.
Would you feel if you had just one guest for a whole hour program, and he hadn't come, and you knew he was flying, and we heard a plane right overhead, and we said, that's probably his plane. He'll never get here now. Eric Johnston? I said that you are a crusader, a flying crusader.
That's right.
You've been going around everywhere, haven't you, telling this story that you want to get over. And I'm going to let you get your story over. But first, I'd just like them to know what a nice human being you are. I've been reading about nothing but you for the last 24 hours. And it seems to me you've had an interesting life, a good life.
Very interesting. Oh, and enjoyed it immensely.
You have?
Mm-hmm.
Did you mind when you had to work your way through college?
Not at all. In fact, I think it was a great stimulant to do more things. People appreciate those things they have to work for. Yeah. The things that are given them, they don't appreciate as much, you know. That's just human nature.
I will say that you had you had various kinds of jobs, didn't you?
Oh, I certainly have.
What was it? You were a stevedore?
Oh, I've done longshoring on the docks. And I've done work in a law library, and I've sold shoes, and I've worked on a surveying crew up in Canada, done all kinds of things.
And I thought, though, the library and the stevedoring were rather contrasted. Did you have them both at the same time?
Both at the same time. I was a law librarian at the University of Washington and was doing stevedoring on the docks in Seattle at the same time. At night, I was doing stevedoring, doing law library work in the afternoon while I went to college.
Didn't hurt you any, did it?
It doesn't seem to. I have no visible scars, either mental or physical.
Did people say to you, you ought to get more rest?
No. I think most of us rest too much.
Yeah. But you know, my real favorite story about you is the time you were in Russia and you sang the hymn, because that's one of my favorite hymns. Wasn't it, Jesus Wants Me for a Sunbeam?
That's right.
Where in the world did you get that? Oh, I've been studying up on you.
Oh, I see.
What made you sing a hymn?
Well, I thought maybe it'd do the communists a little good to have a hymn sung to them. Instead of a hymn of hate, have the hymn of love.
You just couldn't think of anything else that you knew how to sing. I think that's the truth.
That's probably the truth.
Everybody was entertaining, was that it, at this dinner?
Yes, that's an old Russian habit.
They sing and recite?
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't know what they were saying half the time, did you?
Most of the time I didn't know what they were saying. I'm sure they didn't know what I was saying either.
Did you ever learn any Russian?
Oh, yes, I know a little Russian. Not very much, however.
Did they know that you were singing Jesus Wants Me for a Sunbeam?
Yes, I think the interpreter interpreted that to the others who were present.
Did they applaud?
I think they did, as I recall it.
I have a theory about you, Eric Johnston. I don't know how nearly right I am. I remember that at the time you were in Russia, you had at least one great long talk, didn't you, with Stalin?
Oh, yes, I was with him for 3 hours.
3 hours. And I have a theory that he must have showed more of his hand to you than he intended, probably, or else you're just a very acute gentleman. Everything that you've said, that I can find that you said, indicates to me that you knew when you talked to him that he hoped for certain things to happen and was basing his campaign generally on it. Is that true?
Well, I think he was quite frank and said he was going to do certain things. And he's done them fairly well.
Well, he didn't predict that he was going to start the Korean mess,
did
he?
Oh, of course not. I don't think that Korea was in his mind.
But it was in the general trend of his mind, wasn't it?
I think the general trend of aggression. I think the general feeling that Russia must expand, there's nothing particularly new about that, you know. They've been expanding for 250, 300 years under the old czars, from Peter the Great and Catherine the Great, from the little small duchy of Muscovy to the great landmass of Eurasia they've expanded, and they're going to continue to expand unless something stops them. And you know, for 100 years, England stopped them. She fought the War of the Crimea, and she held the Khyber Pass against who? The Afghanistans. And who were they spurred on by the Russians? So she held them for 100 years, and then Japan and Germany held them for quite a while, but those have been destroyed militarily. And so it's up to us if we're going to protect our freedoms to hold them. You know, the reason I took this job, you're probably interested in why I took this
tough
job. Well,
we have to say what your job is.
Oh,
he's administrator of the, you say economic or economic?
Well, I'll leave that to you.
Well, I think we ought to
say economic.
I do, too. Administrator of the Economic Stabilization Agency.
That's right.
Right. And he took it, leaving or going on leave from a $100,000 a year job with a $50,000 expense account. That's what it said in my notes. Therefore, we're very grateful to you because
I think
it was a fine thing for you to do. You didn't. You only did it because you believed that there was a job that badly needed to be done and that it could be done.
I did it for two reasons, if you want to know. I did it because I thought America had two great threats facing her. One was the threat of external aggression, and we had to rearm for that. That was an insurance policy we took out to protect our freedoms, just like we take an insurance policy on our house to protect it from being burned down. The second great threat that faced America was the threat of internal aggression, inflation. And of the two threats, perhaps the second is the more insidious because it's the harder to control, it requires more self-discipline, and more cooperation if we're going to be successful. And the threat of inflation could destroy us just as much as military power outside could destroy us. So we must try to control inflation, and we have done fairly well since we froze wages and prices.
Well, but since you're getting down to your subject, may I ask what will probably seem dull questions, but I think
I
they're questions that will clarify all the situation. You talk about inflation. How do you define inflation?
I define inflation as the lowering in the purchasing power of the dollar. In other words, the dollar goes lower and lower and will buy fewer and fewer things. And
what causes inflation?
Usually it's caused by too few goods and too much money bidding for those goods.
How do you stop it in a case like that if you have a lot of money and too few goods?
You stop it in a number of ways. You stop it by taking part of the money away by taxation, by taking part of it away by increased savings, by having wage and price controls to prohibit them from going higher. A number of things that you do, and we can do it. We know the techniques of doing it if we'll only apply those techniques, if we'll only have enough self-discipline to apply them. But they're Spartan techniques. And no one likes, of course, to do the things that we have to do. I don't like to take castor oil, but once in a while I've had to take it. And I haven't had a habit of castor oil just because I've had to take it once in a while. I don't like controls, but I think in this period of rearmament, where the government is going to spend vastly more than it did in the past. For instance, in the last quarter of last year, the government spent about $12 billion for rearmament. In the last quarter of this year, it's going to spend $50 billion for rearmament. And the American people in the first quarter of next year will have personal income about $40 billion more than in the first quarter of this year. Spendable income on an annual basis. And we will have fewer goods and services to buy because we're cutting back on the use of steel by 40% beginning in September. We're cutting back on the use of copper and aluminum and many other materials. So there will be fewer things to buy, and yet we will have more money to spend it on those few things.
Well, I saw somewhere that you said that our savings up to this year have declined a great deal as compared with 1950. Isn't that true?
The savings in the first quarter of this year were very low. They've picked up some in the second quarter of this year because people have confidence in the dollar, and they've been saving. For the first quarter of this year, we saved at the annual rate of about $10 billion. And that's all kinds of savings, insurance policies, payment on your home, savings bonds, and so forth. In the second quarter of this year, it appears, I haven't the accurate figures yet, but it appears as though we're going at the rate of $21 billion a year. Why? Because people have more confidence in the value of the dollar and they're saving those dollars.
Mm.
And that's what we must do more of.
You took this job of yours just 2 days after what had happened.
Well, I don't think I took it 2 days after anything had happened. I took it 2 days after I took it. I froze wages and prices.
Oh, I thought something happened just before. Well, what's a freeze? Well,
that means that we said that no wages and prices could go above a certain point. But in freezing wages and prices, we obviously may have many inequities because some people had adhered to the government request not to raise prices, and they were in an unfortunate position, and many others raised them anyway. So in freezing prices, we have to do two things, and that's what we've been doing. We have to allow people who have had high costs to raise their prices, and those who raise them too much, we have to roll those prices back to lower levels, and we've been doing that too.
And in other words, you have to repair the inequity that exists.
That's a very good definition.
Just as you stated, the thing that some people were hurt
by it,
but you're doing your best. And then I saw somewhere where you said you were going to clamp down as hard as you could on the ones who violate.
That's right.
And have you done much of
that? Yes, we've done a good deal of that too, and we'll do a good deal more of it. Now, the thing that perturbs me now is the fact that this control bill is up for renewal. And the Congress, one branch of the Congress, enacted a measure which would prohibit us from rolling anything back. Things can roll forward, but they can't roll back. In other words, we will get these roll forwards in prices, but we'll get no rollbacks in prices to compensate for them. Now, what will that mean to the average consumer in America? It could mean $12 to $14 billion higher prices for things within the next year. Translate that to the average family. It could mean about $360 more that each family in America, on the average, would have to pay for the goods and services that they buy. That's a dollar a day for every person. That means higher costs for the charitable institutions and for the educational institutions and for the white-collar workers of America and those on fixed incomes. It's a very insidious thing, and it creates a great deal of unrest and a great deal of class distinction when we take this money out of people's pockets just for increased prices. And that isn't the only thing. Also, it could increase the price that the military pays for things. It could increase those prices by from $3 to $5 billion in the next year.
What was it General Marshall said not so long ago?
Well, he said that the increased prices that the military has paid for things has increased $7 billion since Korea. So you add to that $7 billion that General Marshall says, another $3 to $5 billion, which our failure to have tight controls could mean, it would mean that the military would be paying more for the things that they buy, more than the tax bills passed last fall and the tax bill proposed by the House of Representatives a few weeks ago. In other words, we wipe out entirely those tax bills with higher prices that the military pay for things alone. And that's the reason, Mary, we have to have a tough, tight tax program, a tough, tight control program. And I hope that the people of this country understand that, because if we don't have a tough law, a law that we can operate under, a law that will permit us to roll back prices in those cases where they're too high, as well as roll them forward, if we don't have such a law, we're going to have a much higher cost of living within the next year than we have today, with all of the hardships that come from it. Now, I'm not blaming anyone for this except ourselves. I'm not blaming Congress, because most members of Congress vote their inward conscious convictions. But we haven't told the members of Congress, all of us, what this means. I haven't told the people, the American people, enough what it really means. This isn't a political issue. It isn't Republican or Democratic or anything else. This is an issue of fighting inflation. It's a nonpartisan issue. It's an issue which we all must join. Now, I don't blame anybody for disagreeing that we don't want tight controls, because the right to disagree is an inherent American right, and we want to preserve the right to argue and to debate and to disagree. But it is through argument and debate and disagreement that we bring out the facts, and the facts are that with the type and kind of bill that has passed the Senate, prohibiting rollbacks and requiring us to pass through all costs into increased prices, that such a bill could mean 5 to 7% increase in the cost of living within the next 12 months in this country.
How do you think, Eric Johnson, that you're going to change this? What is the chance for getting a different thing?
Well, I think the chances are good.
What could women do to help you, suppose they agreed with you?
Well, if the women agreed with me, suppose they did, well, I think they could do a lot. They could make themselves vocal in Congress as to what, that they want a tight control bill, the tough bill, a bill that we can hold prices and wages for the next year and hold the cost of living in line.
They've heard lately, though, that it doesn't do much good to write to your congressman.
Well, I think it does a lot of good. As you know, as a matter of fact, in 1946, some of the special interests were saying, don't pay any attention to the mail coming to Congress when they were going to remove controls, you remember. Don't pay any attention to the floods of mail coming in. We don't have legislation by telegrams or by letters. And now the same people are saying, the people haven't written you, therefore, don't roll back any prices. Now, you can't have both things, and I think people ought to write in to their congressmen and senators, don't you?
Well, I certainly do. I think you should write whatever you believe.
Why, of course, whatever you believe. You may not agree with me. Maybe we should have higher prices. I don't think so. The greatest peril that we have is the peril of inflation. Now, we must rearm. I told you that was an insurance program for the protection of our freedoms.
Suppose that there would be a ceasefire order and everything would stop in Korea. What would happen?
Oh, that would have no effect upon it at all, in my opinion. And I tell you why. Because we're still going to rearm. I told him that I didn't think we need to have a depression, that I thought we had enough ideas of how to operate economically, that we need not have a depression. And we haven't had a depression since the war, as a matter of fact.
I still think that that all these little things they've tried have failed. We didn't have the depression.
The rate of about $50 billion a year for defense. And we'll be paying people to make things to consume. Now, it's interesting to note that in Canada, as an illustration, they have only indirect controls. Direct controls, and we need them badly. A good tax bill, good stringent credit policies, and so forth. But we also need that.
I thought the minute ago when you said tax by mistake, you do think that we need
good
heavy taxes.
We're going to need a good heavy tax program.